The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
First, will Joe Biden's presidency greatly improve EU-US relations? Is the vaccine rollout set to hit its targets here? Will our slice of the EU COVID recovery fund soften the blow of the pandemic? Well, to talk about all of this and more, we're joined by Minister for Finance and President of the Eurogroup, Pascal Donoghue. Minister, good morning and welcome.
And a very good morning, Pat, to you and your listeners.
First question is a very simple one. Are you glad to see the back of Donald Trump?
Yes, I am.
And for what reason?
Because I believe that the inauguration of President Trump yesterday reminded the inauguration of President Biden yesterday reminded us of the value of who you elect to office and of the huge difference that character and values can make for the person who is in the Oval Office. I believe that while we still have great difficulties, we still have great challenges, I do believe the arrival of President Biden will change at least the tone for dealing with these great challenges. But I think there's every possibility it will do more than that. It could actually help with the substance of the challenges that we are facing.
Now, he trumpets his Irishness again and again. He even quoted James Joyce in his departure from Wilmington, Delaware, the night before last. Is it time, if you'll pardon the pun, for us to play the green card?
Well, it's certainly a very big asset that we have and we continue to have in dealing with the new administration. And it's not something I think we need to play. I think it's something that's naturally there. I think all of us who care about American politics and understand the effect that it can have on the world were so shocked and so concerned by the events that took place in the run-up to the inauguration of President Biden, that as we now have a new leader leading America and in the Oval Office, it's a reminder to us all now of the responsibility that we do have to work with President Biden. And I don't think it's a case of playing a particular card. I think it's already acknowledged to be a very important part of the relationship that we have with America, and we'll look to naturally use that. And I think that's something that will be welcome within America. And I think we can play a role in the relations that Europe and America will have across many great opportunities and challenges.
Now, he's already spoken out about the DACA generation, those people who came as children and who, under Trump, would no longer have the right to remain there and could be deported to countries where they don't even speak the language and possibly have no connections. That's going to be reversed. Also, there will be a pathway to citizenship for immigrants, and all of that might benefit Irish. But of course, the Irish who are undocumented, who are part and parcel of the American fabric of life, but simply don't have the right to be there on St. Patrick's Day, if the Taoiseach goes, and I don't know if you think he should, will that be on the agenda?
I'm sure it will. And if it's safe and if public health policy in both countries allow it to happen, I'm sure the Taoiseach will make every effort to travel to America. All the issues you've just described there, Pat, and we could look at all of the decisions that President Biden made yesterday, also from the World Health Organization to the decisions that he made about climate change, about the Paris Accord. Remind us, as I said earlier on, of the difference that President Biden can make to the culture, to the tone of America, and therefore to the world. You, when you were introducing the topic earlier on, talked about the relationship between the European Union and America. Like, economically alone, it's worth half of all of the global income in the world and one third of all global trade flows. We do have such a strong foundation of values, of culture, of history, of heritage. And if we can harness that with the economic might of that relationship, as we did throughout many, many decades under different presidencies, It can be a real force for good and for progress in the world and for the benefit of the people of Europe and America. and the social issues that you're talking about there, which are so important in terms of how citizens feel about themselves, the rights that they have, the responsibilities they have too, we will see a different tone in these issues in America.
Any regrets, though, about the pictures that now, of course, are there of various Taoiseach, Fine Gael Taoiseach, Enda Kenny and Leo Varadkar posing with the now discredited Donald Trump in the Oval Office with the bowl of shamrock?
In truth, I don't, because we do have to engage with the president that the people of America elect. And I do have to say, during the many years of dealing with different members of the President Trump's administration, we did have very constructive and very cordial relations. But I think what was such a profound change in all of that were the events that we did see on Capitol Hill, were the scenes and the behaviour that was incited by the then President Trump. And we can have no equivocation or no ambiguity about this. And this is why, you know, when you asked me the question earlier on about how I feel about the exit of former President Trump, we are reminded of the damage that can be done when we see the scenes that we did see on Capitol Hill. When republics and countries get into grave difficulty, that grave difficulty is not mostly caused by what happens at the margins. It's caused by what happens in the center of how countries are run, they're governed, and the culture they set. And we saw a very grave reminder of that, which is why the exit of President Trump onto whatever he wants to go and do is as important as a development as the election of President Biden. And the clear change in tone and behaviour that President Biden has already indicated is so vital.
You know, Joe Biden will still do what's best for America. Now, one of the things that Trump was keen to encourage was to get U.S. multinationals back onto American soil. There was a kind of resentment, even though, you know, the Irish companies that have invested in America are always forgotten. There are a huge number of those and doing very well, too. But do you think it's going to change that push to get multinationals back on American soil with maybe some sort of tax carrots?
I think that dynamic will still be there, Pat, and I think it's a really important point in the discussion that we're having here, that the substance of many issues that developed in recent years under the last administration, much of the substance of that, I expect, will still resurface in American politics and will still influence policy choices that they make. Issues regarding global trade, where companies are located. I do expect the Biden administration will still have views regarding how trade can be balanced in a way that is more beneficial to the people of America. So I do expect that dynamic to still be there. But there's two really important caveats to that. The first one is when we have that dialogue and we have that engagement, it will also be happening in a way in that President Biden and his team do value and do recognise the worth of good relations with other parts of the world and other countries in the world. And secondly, they place value on multilateral institutions like the European Union and the World Trade Organization, whereas the last administration saw them as forces that were looking to undermine America. So I think there'll be a balance. I think you're correct to say that the issues that you've raised there will still be important. The Biden administration will want to make progress on them, but they will be, I believe, handled in a different way, and we'll need to respond to that then in a different way.
Were you dismayed at some of the remarks Janet Yellen, the incoming Treasury Secretary, made about different trading blocs manipulating currencies? I mean, everyone presumed we're talking about China, but the EU was mentioned, and I presume it's the activities of the European Central Bank in terms of quantitative easing and so on, and what that does to the value of the currency. If you keep on pumping money into a zero interest rate economy, I'm not up with the technicalities of all of that, but the criticism was made by Janet Yellen. So is this going to bring some sort of a focus on the way we do our business fiscally?
I think it goes back to your earlier point there about some of the issues that began to develop in recent years, and not expecting that they're going to disappear immediately as a new administration takes over. you know, the concerns that Secretary Yellen is raising there have been long-standing concerns of the American Treasury. I think it's fair to say, as you acknowledged in your question to me, that they're probably those words are uttered with other parts of the world in mind and other currencies in mind rather than just the euro. And if the value of the euro is being in any way affected at the moment by decisions that are being made during this era of COVID, of course, the Federal Reserve in America, and because of the magnitude of the stimulus plan that the Congress and President Biden are likely to put in place, they're also putting in place similar moves themselves. So, look, these are the kind of issues that there will be engagement on in the coming years. But if you look at the new American Treasury Secretary, she is a former Federal Reserve chairperson. She's a former really senior policy maker in the last Democratic administration. And she's a deeply well-read, deeply kind of policy maker imbued in expertise, and we will just have to deal and engage with her on those matters, which we'll do. Will it have an effect here in Ireland? Some of the issues we've touched on will continue to matter to the Biden administration, and we'll work on them with those.
Now, back to COVID and the impact at home, and we'll talk about the EU's COVID-19 Recovery and Resilience Facility, of which we will get a whack in a moment. But we're in a pretty bad place as we speak. Again, more deaths reported last evening, 61 or whatever it was. And all of us are considering that if we had done things differently before Christmas, that, you know, in exchange, what we've done is we've exchanged 3 weeks of festivities for maybe 3 months of lockdown and dozens of deaths. And that seems to me something that might have been avoidable. There is a bit of spin saying, you know, none of us anticipated it. Well, NPHET did. I mean, they did the numbers for you guys, and you made a political choice, and you got that political choice wrong.
And I, like anybody else, but there's a particular responsibility on me as a member of government, I'll always reflect on decisions that I've made to help me understand how I can make other decisions better in the future. I do believe overall, due to the efforts of the Irish people and public health and economic decisions that we've made here in Ireland, we have put in place good decisions for dealing with COVID-19. And we have reduced the loss of life and reduced the harm on public health. But as I hear the death figures and I see where we are now, of course I go back to where we were before Christmas and the decisions that we made. But as the country...
I mean, the Taoiseach yesterday said, in response to a question, that the government had substantially followed NPHET's advice. Well, yeah, you could say that most of it they did follow. But there was a key issue, and that was, you know, don't open up everything. You make a choice between allowing people to socialise at home or socialise in public in the bars and restaurants. And you guys did both.
Well, Pat, we made in terms of household contact and then what we did allow for a period of time in relation to dining. We put in place limited measures in relation to that for specific periods of time. But like, as we are looking at the decisions that we made, let's go back to the context in which those decisions were made at that point in time. And the context was hundreds of thousands of people unemployed with profound effects on their well-being and about their own future prospects as well. And secondly, when we made those public health decisions, we were making it in the context of having implemented a very demanding and restrictive set of public health measures, with our economy already being locked down for many, many, many weeks, with a very low level of spread of the disease in the country versus international standards. So if we hadn't made some effort to try and open up our economy at that point, I think two questions then would prompt and be important to the debate. The first one is, how would contact then have happened across our society? Would even more contact have happened within homes? And secondly, I would then be on your show here this morning with our economy having been locked down in different ways since the middle of October. And that of itself would also have huge consequences for health and for the prospects of our country.
What's the difference between the extended lockdown we're facing now, than, you know, keeping the lid on things before Christmas. Everybody knew that hordes of people were going to come back from the UK, where, if you remember, the virus rate of infection was the worst in the world. Just as we were about to welcome home so many people from the UK, we also had the problem, and we can't avoid this, of what was going on in Northern Ireland, the very high rates of infection, which of course spilled over into Donegal and Monaghan and Louth. And it seems we're incapable of making any decisions on how that should be balanced. I suspect that Arlene Foster, if we continue to be very much higher than them, that they would lock down the border quick enough to keep us out.
Oh, well, then we'd have to think about what the consequences of that would be and how practically it could be developed. And I think if the Irish government had taken steps to look, to use your phrase, to lock down the border, I've no doubt at all that I would be on your and other shows dealing with two questions. First, dealing with what would be the political and economic consequences of doing that. And secondly, dealing with the practical issue of how we would actually make that happen, given the length of the border and how porous it is. And they're profoundly important, both political
and... Yeah, but we made no effort. We made no effort at all. And again and again, before Christmas even... No, I mean, we talked to doctors in Donegal. They said one checkpoint for one day on a bridge and then no more. You know, and we were talking about these things before Christmas because people were saying, what about remind ministers of the foot and mouth and how quickly we closed everything down and, you know, effectively had an all-island approach to foot and mouth and we couldn't manage it for people.
But Pat, let's go back, and I don't accept your contention at all that we did nothing. Let's go back to the period in which we were making the decisions then and the guidance that was given. The guidance that was given here in our own country was that you should only engage in necessary travel. We had limitations in place for not either leaving your county or not going beyond a certain number of kilometres beyond your home. The natural consequence of that would have been to significantly reduce any travel across the border. So it's just not correct to say we did nothing.
But what was done about it? I mean, guidance is one thing. We know what happened in Rathkeel, a massive cluster in Rathkeel, and we know why it happened, that many traveller families make that trip every year to Rathkeel for the Christmas period. Well known in advance, it happened. It wasn't stopped. Loads and loads of trailers and cars coming off the ferries in Rosslare and heading to Rathkeel. No one was ever turned back, as far as I know.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not in a position to comment on that specific incident because I don't have the detail of it to hand. But what I do know, it's across that period, and Garda Síochána put in place a lot of checkpoints, a lot of activity to try to reduce this travel and to ensure that the public health guidance that we had at that point was being implemented. And I just go back to the point that I opened up earlier on with and your contention of us being able to lock down the border. Consider what that would have meant for other things that really matter to our country. And of course, we would have hit immediately vast practical difficulties regarding our ability to actually do it. It's incorrect and wrong to say across that period we were doing nothing. We had public health guidance in place.
Okay, can I read? This is from Neffet's. Neffet's letter to you, though, on November 26th said...
The overwhelming majority of our country was implementing the public health advice at that point in the time. It really isn't accurate to say the government was doing nothing.
Yeah, no, the letter from Neffet, November 26th. We do not have the flexibility to enable a resumption of hospitality in restaurants and bars if we are to enable an easing of the current prohibition on mixing between households. So you can't do both and you did both. That's what Neffet said. That was their advice, 26th of November.
And let me be clear, across the entire period of dealing with COVID, for the year in which we were, nearly the year that we've been dealing with it, we did, for most of the time, accept the advice and guidance that Neffet was giving, the overwhelming majority of the time. But you are correct to say, across that particular period, we did make decisions that did differ to a degree from what Neffet were advising. That's the case. But I just go back to the point that I made to you earlier on. Just bear in mind the context across the period in which we were making those decisions. We were making those decisions with hundreds of thousands of people not having a job, us trying to get them back to work and seeing if it was possible to do it. And, you know, I, again, across that period, engaged in many debates, in which the stringency of public health measures that we had in place was also the source of criticism. And we were being asked, why are we putting in place such demanding measures in comparison to what other countries were doing? What we attempted to do and looked to do to see, was it possible to get a new balance between the opening of our economy and crucially getting people back to work and allowing a degree of contact across the Christmas period and continuing with our efforts to suppress that disease. And it's clear that in conjunction with the new variant and in conjunction with the amount of additional contact that happened across the Christmas period has now been one of the factors that has had an effect on where we are now. And what we are
okay,
now
so,
doing.
So basically, the government is standing over the decision. The government is standing over its decision. Now, the reason we push you on this, because a lot of the listeners will say, what are you doing? That's the past. You know, you have to learn from your mistakes. So one of the listeners here on News Talk is saying, would you ask the minister what we're going to do to stop the new variants from coming into Ireland? Netherlands banning flights from the UK, South Africa and Latin America, and they've introduced an 8 p.m. curfew. Like, are we afraid to do the hard things? Do you know, stopping people at airports, making sure they're tested. If they go into a hotel, they pay for it to stay in that hotel, maybe a bargain basement price, but they stay there until they're free to go. That's been done in other countries, never done here. Why not?
So just let me deal with your point there regarding the history. Of course, we do need to debate it, and it's very, very recent history. And I, of course, need to be held to account for decisions that I've made. And let there be no doubt about this, that I, of course, accept responsibility as a member of the government for decisions I made and the impact they've had and for all the other things I've had to do in the 10 to 11 months that I've been trying to lead and work on behalf of our country to deal with COVID-19. So I want to be really clear about that. And I also did say to you that, of course, I do accept that the decisions that we made then was one of the factors in where we are now. But also, we've made many other decisions that have helped our country deal with this disease and helped our citizens deal with the consequences of this disease. And I'd respectfully make that point as well.
Okay.
In terms of your contention, Pat, that we're not willing to do hard things, I mean, just reflect on where we are now with so much of our country shut down. Look at where we've been over the last 10 months. The magnitude of decisions that we've made that have had a profound consequence on the lives of people. That's not a government that is unwilling to do hard things. It's a government that's made really hard decisions, conscious of the profound effect that it has on our society. In relation to your specific point, for example, how we're dealing with travel, this is, of course, why we've made the decision in relation to PCR testing, that you can't come, you can't get onto a flight coming to Ireland unless you're in a situation that you have a PCR test that shows that you've tested negative within 72 hours of you departing. And the reality of what that means practically is the amount of connectivity now available into Ireland is a very small fraction of where it was, a tiny fraction of where it was a year ago. And the amount of access in and out of our country at the moment now is exceptionally low. So it's just not consistent with the magnitude of decisions that we've made over the last 10 months to suggest we're not willing to do hard things, and the way in which
you make decisions, but there's no enforcement. That is one of the issues. Anyway, we'll park that there.
You can't make a contention saying there's no enforcement. That's at odds with the reality of what our guards are doing. It's at odds with the reality if you go into an airport at the moment and you're trying to come to Ireland from another country, what's in place at the moment there to see if you have a PCR test. And it's also at odds with the reality that I believe only 2-3% of people that, for example, who've been coming from the UK to Ireland haven't had a PCR test. So to infer or even to suggest that you did there a moment ago, that there's no enforcement, doesn't reflect the reality of what's happening either in our airports or across our country at the moment.
Yeah, we could tease that one out because it's late in the day. We know how few people actually were contacted about where they were when it was done on an honour system, and so many people refused even to confirm that. We talked about that in yesterday's programme, but as I say, we'll park that. There's one final question. It's about the EU's COVID-19 Recovery and Resilience Facility, which is worth €673 billion. And we are entitled to get about 853 million as a first tranche and a smaller tranche later on in 2023. What are we going to spend that money on? Who gets it?
Well, Pat, we'll be making decisions on that across the coming weeks. It is a fund that is designed to support the recovery of the European Union. And as part of that, Ireland will be benefiting from that. Where we will be prioritising that fund will be how we can deliver change in our economy that works towards a green transition, works towards making our economy more digital and more digitally sustainable, and also helps with skills within our economy. There will also be a particular focus, I imagine, on where we are with our fishery sector, given the effect they've experienced, for example, due to COVID, though we may also be able to deal with that through the Brexit Adjustment Reserve Fund. So that's how we're going to be using it. And it's going to be on top of the huge amount of exceptional supports that we now have in place in our economy, like our wage subsidy scheme, like our scheme CERIS to help support closed businesses, like the commercial rates waiver that we have in place. So it's just one of a range of measures that are in place to help our country's economy recover.
All right. Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance and President of the Eurogroup. Thank you very much for joining us.